Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Checkout, a podcast you can get on your platform, Spotify, Apple Music, Google Play, Stitcher, or just go to our website, checkoutjazz.org, produced at WBGO 88.3 FM in Newark. I'm Simon Rettner. You may not know the name Justin Stanton, but you may have seen him on stage as one of the original members of Snarky Puppy. The trumpeter and keyboardist, composer, steps aside from the spectacle of Snarky Puppy to look inward, to find his secret place. That's the name of his debut recording on Ground Up. I caught up with Justin last summer at the Istanbul Jazz Festival, where Snarky Puppy performed unique collaboration with a 16-piece traditional Turkish drumming ensemble. And yes, we're going to hear some of the highlights from that performance. But really, this show is about Justin, how his original songwriting is informed by a lot of other artists, for instance, Wendy Carlos, the underappreciated synth pioneer, a Los Angeles-based singer-songwriter named Moses Sumney, the great Miles Davis Quintet, the second one. Plus, Stan gives us an inside look on his own songwriting process with the singer-songwriter Melanie Watson. I should also mention, at the very end of the show, Michael League makes a little cameo appearance to give us background information on these Kurdish ancient drums. All of that coming your way on this edition of The Checkout. Thanks for checking in. And we're here in what may be the 10th largest city on the planet, the cultural mecca that is Istanbul. Justin Stanton, welcome to The Checkout here in Turkey, man.
Thanks, Simon. Good to be here.
So on this program, we're going to be giving you an exclusive performance of Snarky Puppy's performance here with 16 Turkish percussionists. And we're going to get into that a little bit later. But for now, we are also here to celebrate Secret Place on the Ground Up music label. Now, Justin, if you weren't such a humble, down-to-earth guy, I almost think you would have started your record with Prelude to Wendy. You know, an intro statement. Just say, yeah, I can write Bach fugues too.
Well, certainly there's an homage to Bach there. I would never consider myself on the level. I mean, he's the godfather for sure.
It does have this kind of primer effect, and it's so different sounding from everything else on the record that it sort of piques your interest. You're like, this can't be Justin. I have to listen to more. Prelude to Wendy. Who's Wendy?
It's sort of homage to Wendy Carlos, who was a pioneer in the synth world, recorded a really famous record called Switched on Bach. She took famous Bach pieces, one of the Brandenburg Concertos, and some other things, and adapted them for Moog synthesizers, and it was really groundbreaking record, and very popular too, and really put those synthesizers on the map and sort of opened the game up in a lot of ways for musicians to use these instruments in those ways. Also, notably, she did the soundtrack to Clockwork Orange. Then she takes the motifs from Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, and it's all played on synthesizers, and it's such a unique sound, and anyone who's seen the movie instantly thinks of the soundtrack to that movie, and that was Wendy Carlos. But she's also done very experimental things and really pushed the boundaries of synthesizers. So Prelude to Wendy is certainly an homage to her in that way, to write a composition sort of based in that Switched on Bach territory.
Right now we're talking about a secret place. And I suppose a secret place is kind of a metaphor for a bunch of things, right? It could be your own privacy as a musician, but sort of the precious place of where creativity is born.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right on the money. It can mean a lot of different things. Music is a very social thing, and certainly in Snarky Puppy, music is very social, and it's a way to bring people together, as was evidenced last night, bringing musicians from around the world, from America and also from Turkey, together to play music together and sort of become a unified sound. But to me, also, there's a special part of music where it's something that you experience yourself, and maybe you're on a long flight and you have a chance to really sit with a record. That's one of my favorite times, to sit with a record. And I have my headphones in, I'm on the subway, or I'm walking around town. It's a nice way to sort of be more insular with the music and sort of take it in a different way. It sort of resonates differently than in a group setting, which is equally as important, but I feel like it's two sides of the same coin. I just remember sitting in my room and listening to records, and my parents owned a record shop, so I was exposed to music from a very early age. I was also an only child, too. I spent a lot of time by myself as a kid. So there's an important part of that element of music to me, of experiencing the music on one's own.
The title track is one of the more personal feelings of being in a secret place.
Certainly.
And man, you could play some blues here. This is what a beautiful tune.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah.
I can imagine myself on an airplane, like listening to this for the first time and being taken to my secret place.
Yeah.
Does it feel like a real personal statement? Putting your heart out there on your sleeve, as they say?
Yeah, I think in musically speaking, yes. What resonates with people when they hear your music is it has to have... has to feel that way. Because if it doesn't resonate with me, how do I expect it to resonate with someone else?
What was the last recording you sat with that took you to a secret place?
You know, there's a record that came out a couple years ago by a vocalist and instrumentalist, Moses Sumney.
Oh yeah, of course.
Aromanticism. For me, that's
he's
one of these
sort
records.
Of like this amorphous singer-songrityer, trippy R&B psychedelic guy, right?
Yeah, very original. And that's one of these records I can sit down with headphones and listen to, and it's so beautiful. I really like the last track on his record, and it's called Self-Help Tape. It's really nice, and it's just, he just takes a loop and sort of develops it, and it's very simple, but the way that it builds throughout.
Thank you.
the contours of the song are very beautiful, and I love the production. The production is really nice. To me, it's one of those records that fires on all cylinders. I love it.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us, Justin, here at the Istanbul Jazz Festival, talking about his own recording on Ground Up, Secret Place. Clearly you have a sense of humor with Shoegazer. Because there's really nothing shoegazing about the sound of the song.
Right. We had a month off from touring, and I sort of wanted to not be in New York because as much as I love New York, it's easy to get distracted in the city.
You needed a writer's retreat.
Yeah, I needed a writer's retreat. And I was fortunate to have two friends in Switzerland that were able to help me out and sort of furnish a place for me to stay and work on music and...
What's Afrobeat about Switzerland?
Nothing is Afrobeat about Switzerland. The first melody in the tune that's played on trumpet and flute by my friend Domenica Fassati, who has a fantastic band called Underground System, is a sort of Afrobeat-based band. So I wanted to collaborate with her. When I started playing it, it just sort of came out. It's one of these things when you luck up and you hit a moment of inspiration and the melody just happens. It's like there wasn't a lot of work that went into the melody. It just was this thing that happened. And it felt very much coming out of like the mid-60s Miles Davis Second Great Quintet melodies. I was like, man, it's like Miles Davis in his own way was sort of like the original shoegazer in a way. You know, play down.
Besides that famous image of him actually staring at his shoes.
Exactly. You know, he's like playing his trumpet down the floor. He's got his back to the audience. And I'm like, this guy was kind of like, he's a shoegazer. So I know when people think shoegazer, they're thinking of a certain point of music. But for me, I was like, you know, Miles Davis is sort of a shoegazer too. So it's sort of an homage to Miles in that great period of music with his quintet of Tony Williams, Ron Carter, Herbie Hancock, Wayne Shorter, and even on into the 70s, the Bitches Brew and A Silent Way era.
Now, I'm not tripping, right? There is like an Afrobeat kind of thing in here, right?
Yeah, there's two distinct halves in the song, and the sort of for me the thread that ties them together is the basic form and chord progression.
Thank you. Justin Stanton joins us at the Istanbul Jazz Festival. Just after their gig, Snarky Puppy performing with 16 Turkish drummers playing their folkloric instruments, and we're going to bring you a little bit of that again later in the show.
Have you checked out that bootleg from 1969? It's the Miles Quintet. It's with Dave Holland, Chick Corea, and Jack DeJohnette, and they're playing, actually, the next, it's one of the vessels we're playing on this trip in Teeb.
Oh, nice.
Juan Le Pen, and it's 1969, and originally it was a bootleg, but I think Columbia released it.
Oh, wow.
Recently. It is on fire. It is so good, and man, it's such a vibe. And actually, also on YouTube, there's a video of the concert, and...
Oh, wow.
You see some serious vibes from Miles. Man, it's crazy. It's so good.
What are you looking at? What are we seeing?
Oh, there's a particular moment. They're playing Milestones, and Miles is right out of the gate with the first solo. And man, he plays this blistering solo. He finishes, and he's walking off stage, and he walks by Wayne, and Wayne's next up to bat, as they say, and... Miles walks by him and sort of like checks him with his shoulder and says something in his ear very, very aggressively. And Wayne, like without batting an eye, just starts going to the solo. Doesn't even look over and just starts playing the solo. And you're like, man, I wonder what Miles just said to Wayne, because it looked really tough. And I can imagine it would be tough to play in Miles' band. Really rewarding, but whew, you know, everybody's heard stories, so... Energy on that stage in that concert, it's one of my favorite live, one of my favorite recordings, period, of Miles.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us, Justin. Who's Melanie Watson?
So Melanie is a fantastic singer and songwriter. Something about you. I have this song that most people that write, you got a stack of ideas sitting either on your computer or on your desk that are unfinished. And I had one that I really wanted to do something with. So I called her and asked her if she'd be interested in co-writing, and she was. And she came to the apartment, and we started working on it, and within half an hour, the song was done. And this was something that had been sitting unfinished on my computer for 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, and I just didn't know what to do with it, and she came over, and then it was done. I sort of had an idea of what I wanted with a groove and a chord progression and a loose bass would form up to a certain point in the song. We sort of developed a melody together for the verse and the chorus. For me at that time, it was very much the way the harmonic movement happened, because it's in four, but there's sort of like a 6-4 bar or 2-4 bar in there. And to me, that was like a very identifiable part of what the song was. And then Melanie came up with the "What Do You Want?" the hook. And it was like, okay, well, that's definitely another, that automatically became another essential element of that song. So,
just sort of like putting together the pieces step by step.
Yeah, and then from that, it was like, okay, well, now it makes sense to sort of alter the form and then create a new section that's based on previous sections.
Right, so once you determine you're absolutely clear about another part, it sort of opens a door to revealing the other parts.
Yeah, you could call it a secret place, if you will. You just discovered the passageway to finishing the song.
We're listening to Justin Stanton's B-sides. I hope he's not mad at me.
I stacked the record that way. I wanted the record to be like a playlist, or like a set list, rather. Something you would listen to from start to finish. And I know that's sort of non-traditional. Most people stack the deck at the front. But I was like, I want it to go... Not that I think the songs at the beginning are weak, but I did sort of design it in that way, to play like a set list.
Speaking of really hooky melodies, you had one very featured solo in last night's concert at the Istanbul Jazz Festival. Also a song I believe is on Immigrants.
You're talking about Chavi.
Ah, that's Chavi, right.
Yeah.
Let's just hear a little bit of you okay. on Chavi. Just let's hear your solo from the Istanbul Jazz Festival, just so we hear some Justin with Snarky.
Cool.
So this is a Moroccan rhythm, right? Or not? Am I mistaken?
It's inspired by music from Morocco, Ganawa music. And I'm certainly not the expert to speak on that, but I can't...
Because now I'm going to ask you about the Turkish drums, Justin Stanton.
Wait, is this Jeopardy? Did I show up to the wrong show?
You're like basically swallowed up by these drums on stage. You basically disappear because they're so big and there's so many of them on stage.
Visually and sonically, I would say, yeah.
And now for a quick descriptor of these Persian ancient drums. Here's Michael League.
I'm by no means an expert, but I'm a student of this instrument, which is called daf, most commonly D-A-F. In Turkey, they call it erbane. And it's an instrument largely, I think it's most popular in Iran. But my teacher's Kurdish. And, you know, the Kurds kind of occupy the corners of these four countries of Iran, Syria, Iraq, and Turkey. So this drum is kind of in all the places where the Kurds are as well. It's a folkloric instrument, largely kind of associated with Sufi stuff, Sufi music. It's a circular frame drum, like a big wooden circle with a skin on the front, traditionally goat skin, but normally now it's synthetic. And it has these tiny little rings hanging from the wooden frame on the inside of the drum, like chains. So you kind of have a whole drum set in one instrument. You have a bass sound, a kind of a snare sound, a tom sound, and then like a hi-hat or cymbal sound.
And you need 10 of them in a traditional setting?
It can be played solo or it can be played in large groups. But in the context of like playing in this band, it's really nice to have a huge group all playing the exact same rhythm. And that, to me, that's kind of where the kind of like trance-like primal appeal is of the instrument, is when everyone's just completely playing in unison. It's super hypnotic.
Beautiful. Even us. Thank you. Even Us. We just heard Snarky Puppy with, what's the name of this ensemble?
Defjen. D-E-F-J-E-N. Defjen. And certainly Mike has taken his study very seriously of Turkish tradition and music and the percussion from this region. And as evidenced through the latest record, is very much a lot of the songs are very inspired by his experience. Snarky Puppy, I know Mike is sensitive to it, and we all try to be sensitive to the fact that we're drawing upon cultures. We're not a world music band, we're not a jazz band, but we certainly draw influences from a lot of different music from around the world, and we want to be as sensitive as possible and as respectful as possible when we're drawing from these influences and not trying to copy or emulate these styles and appropriate them in a negative way.
Now let's be super real with this stuff. You do feel some heat by some people, probably some critics of the world, that have spoken out or at least criticized you guys about this, right?
I think it's an important thing to consider, and we've certainly talked about it. Whether it's featuring artists on the Family Dinner Records from around the world, or you know this newest record, which is, you know, like we were talking about, influenced by music from Turkey, music from Morocco. In what way can we do this and pay respect and our homage to the music from around the world, but not feel like we're exploiting it or appropriating it in a negative way?
I mean, I'm always going to be defenders of you guys, because I feel like you take on this music extremely respectfully, and you're bringing attention and interest in these instruments that, you know, people from our part of the world would never even know about. Like, I'm right now doing Google searches trying to understand this stuff. So I can only think the net gain at the end of the day is beneficial.
I think so. There's maybe two answers to it. One is through seriously pursuing and studying an instrument or a culture, immersing oneself in a culture. Not saying, okay, well, I'm going to check out some I like this music. I'm going to check out some recordings. You know, Mike went to Turkey. He's developed a network here, a network of friends and musicians. And I think that's hugely important. And I think that started in Dallas when we were in school in North Texas. It's like, we're going down to Dallas and we're meeting musicians. And that's how we met Bobby Sparks, Bernard Wright, Robert C. Wright, Sean Martin.
And that was all Michael Leake. He's like, we're going to Dallas and we're meeting musicians.
Well, it wasn't like, all right, let's get together and have this meeting. This is what we're going to do. This is the game plan here. It was like, we just started going down. And Mike was one of the first. He started playing in some churches down there and he started meeting musicians. And we were going out to jam sessions and meeting these musicians. And what had typically been something that had been separated, which was this network in school in Denton, 60 miles north and 40 miles north of Dallas at the University of North Texas, and this incredible group of musicians in Dallas with a completely different background and aesthetic, but still like completely mind-blowingly advanced. Mike sort of started to bridge that gap, I think, and then
and
we
also... And this is also a gap of white and black too, right?
I mean, if we want to get down to it, it certainly was, yeah. But quickly after the connection was made, I feel like, I mean, everybody has their different backgrounds, right? But when it's time to make music together, I think everybody on stage, there's a mutual respect and trying to create something bigger than oneself on stage.
Thank you so much for joining us. Mixing is always a good thing and will continue to be celebrated on this show. Thanks for being here in Istanbul at the Istanbul Jazz Festival.
Thanks for having me, Simon.
You're listening to Survival Imperative from the debut recording by Justin Stanton on Ground Up called Secret Place. And we thank him for joining us at this year's Istanbul Jazz Festival. The concert you heard by Snarky Puppy was recorded at the Istanbul Jazz Festival, and they just released it. You can get it by going to Snarky Puppy's website. There you can also find information about Justin Stanton, Secret Place. I'd like to give a shout out to the recording engineer for both Justin Stanton and the live Snarky Puppy recording from Turkey, Nick Hard. And you can find out more information about the Istanbul International Jazz Festival by going to their website, iksv.org. You know where to find us on social media, at Checkout Jazz is our handle. We have a Facebook page, and all of our shows are archived at checkoutjazz.org. Or just subscribe to the podcast. And while you're there, if you like what we do, please give us a 5-star rating. The Checkout is a production of WBGO Newark. I'm Simon Rettner. Thanks for checking us out.